Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber look-alike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who is Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love freedom, I love life and family, but I'm not a conservative.
I'm a hardcore libertarian.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills!
I grew up in a small town called Peculiar, Missouri. Then one day, I moved to New York City. When Ron Paul ran for president, I volunteered to help. Things got kind of crazy after that, and I ended up in Washington, D.C. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the Republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website I built to help further the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about is ideas. And the one idea that I care about the most...
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Pure freedom on the Freedom Report Podcast, Episode 5. Today's top stories, Obama's poll numbers are at record lows after the botched rollout of healthcare.gov. Opposition to the Affordable Care Act is now at record highs, with 57% of people saying that they oppose the law and 46% of people strongly opposing it. Also, lies, spies, and secret files. The Director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, released a series of documents last night on court order that show that the agency was more interested in collecting cell phone location data than they previously acknowledged. The documents revealed how the NSA failed to operate within court-imposed rules to protect citizens' privacy. Also, coming up at the end of the show, we've got a story that's just absolutely blowing up over at thelibertarianrepublic.com for the last couple of days. A Texas couple was sentenced to 60 years in prison for allowing their baby, Riley, to starve nearly to death. The story is causing waves online due to an old debate amongst libertarians about whether there is a positive obligation to feed and nurture a child. Stick around to the end of the show for a discussion about natural rights and positive obligation. Now, I want to start today by talking about a poll that was done by the Washington Post. This is the first poll that's come out since the president started to signal that he would make good on his promises to actually allow people to keep their health insurance plans. This poll shows that by now, almost 2-1, Americans oppose the individual mandate, with more than half people saying that they strongly oppose it. Now, in contrast, almost 6 in 10 support the provision that requires companies with more than 50 employees to provide health insurance or face a financial penalty. So these people aren't Tea Partiers. These are moderates. Now, the health care law has become a political burden for the elected officials who support it. So the Democrats who supported this law, they're in big trouble. 4 in 10 Americans are saying that they are more likely to oppose a politician who backs the legislation, while just over a fifth are saying that they would be more likely to support such a politician. So a lot of Democrats are probably looking at this and seeing the writing on the wall here. Now, Obama's approval rating has fallen to 42%. This is a huge drop in a month, 6 points. And this is his record low. His disapproval rating is at about 55%, which is the worst of his presidency. Now, 44% are saying that they strongly disapprove of the way that he is handling his job. Again, another worst for the Obama presidency. Also, for the first time in Obama's presidency, the Washington Post is reporting that a bare majority of Americans, 52%, are saying that they have an unfavorable impression of him, and 46% are saying that they view him favorably. So 52 unfavorable, 46 favorably. Now, these are declining from a net positive of 23 points that he had when he was inaugurated back in January. They also did a measurement of leadership and empathy that's been tested, and Obama is now underwater on this poll for the first time ever. So half or more people are now saying he's not a strong leader, and he doesn't understand the problems of, quote, people like you, and he's not honest and trustworthy. This is the, would you want to have a beer with a guy test. The perceptions of the president as a strong leader have dropped 15 points since January, and over the past year, the percentage of registered voters who say he is not honest and trustworthy has increased by 12 points. Now, the survey also asked people whether if they consider Obama a good manager, and the Washington Post believes that this is directly linked to the problems of healthcare.gov. 56% of people said no, he's not a good manager, and only 1% say yes. So for only the second time in his presidency, just as many people are saying now that Obama's views are too liberal and that his views on most issues right now are just over the top. Now, the last time he was perceived this way, and this is really the key point that you can take from this, the last time that President Obama was perceived this way was 2 months before the 2010 midterm elections, when Republicans picked up 63 seats in the House. So the Democrats must be terrified that there's going to be another sort of a Tea Party tidal wave. Even though the Tea Party is seen as about as favorable as the Republican Party right now, it's very low. If healthcare.gov continues to be bungled as it rolls out throughout the new year, ladies and gentlemen, you can just bet that next year you might see more Democrats jumping off of that sinking ship that is known as Obamacare. All right, let's switch topics. I want to talk about the National Security Agency. So last night, the Director of National Intelligence released what appeared to be a court document that authorized the NSA to conduct sweeping collections of Americans' communication records for, quote-unquote, counterterrorism purposes. So the documents describe how the NSA failed to abide by court-imposed rules to protect Americans' privacy, and they showed that the agency was actually more interested in collecting our cell phone location data than they actually had acknowledged. Now, three pages were released that showed the categories of metadata that the NSA proposed to collect. Now, the data, a lot of this data was blacked out, and especially the date, but the opinion appeared to be that the court order placed the NSA's internet metadata program under court supervision until July of 2004, according to an NSA Inspector General report that was leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Now, before that, before 2004, the NSA had been collecting email records without any court or congressional approval as part of the surveillance program that was authorized by Bush. This was the Patriot Act provisions. The judge found that a relatively low standard of quote-unquote relevance to collect the information was necessary to permit, as is the case in criminal investigations, the use of this very valuable investigative tool at the critical early stages of foreign intelligence and international terrorism investigations. So the judge also acknowledged that the volume of data was enormous, but the actual amount was redacted by the NSA. And the NSA is claiming that they need this massive amounts of data to identify unknown people who may be in contact with terrorists or whose email addresses would be used to search the database. Analysts know that terrorist emails are located somewhere in the billions of data bits. What they cannot know ahead of time is exactly where, the judge said. She also said that the NSA is using two methods to search the data. One of them is called contact chaining, and the other one hasn't been revealed. But basically, contact chaining is where they're using computer algorithms to identify our email accounts and to find out if any of them have been in contact with the suspect's email account, as well as accounts that have been in contact with an account in the first tier of results. The judge is arguing that Americans don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy for the metadata that they're generating, and she's citing a Supreme Court case, the 1979 decision called Smith versus Maryland. This came about with the use of the pen register, which is basically saying that if you send information over a telephone line, then you basically have no legitimate expectations of privacy, since the phone numbers that you are sending out, that you're typing into the phone, would have been recorded by the phone company anyway. So in Katz versus the United States in 1967, the Supreme Court established the reasonable expectations of privacy test. And also, it overturned Olmstead versus the United States. The Katz versus the United States turned over Olmstead and held that wiretaps were unconstitutional because there was a reasonable expectation that communication would be private. And at that point, the government was required to get a warrant to execute a wiretap. Now, in Smith versus Maryland, the one that the judge is citing, the Supreme Court held that the pen register was not a search because the petitioner voluntarily conveyed numerical information to the telephone company. This is what they're saying about our metadata. So if you're voluntarily broadcasting metadata on the internet, the NSA is claiming the right to have it. The Smith decision basically left the pen register outside of constitutional protections, and if there was going to be any further privacy protections, they were going to have to be enacted by the Congress as some sort of a statutory privacy law. And this is getting civil libertarians really fired up. Listen to this. This is from Patrick Toomey of the ACLU. He said, on the logic of these opinions, almost every digital footprint that we leave behind can be vacuumed up by the government. Who we talk to, what we read, where we go online. This is your internet searches, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Rumold, who is the staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, they've been on the front of fighting these battles. They said that the release by the NSA mirrored previous release of documents by the NSA in which the courts, quote, signed off on constitutionally questionable, very questionable, orders that affected the privacy rights of millions of American citizens. Ladies and gentlemen, these are the rights that the American colonists fought for from the king during the American Revolution. During the American Revolution, before the American Revolution, the King George III passed a series of acts called the Abominable Acts. And part of those acts allowed for troops to write their own search warrants. This was a constitutional right that was enshrined in the Fourth Amendment, was to stop big governments from being able to get your information without a warrant. I mean, what exactly is so wrong with that is what I want to know. If somebody thinks that you may be suspected of a crime, then the government needs to go and get a warrant. If you are suspected of a crime or of terrorism or of any sort of other crime, the government should be required to go and get a warrant. This is a fight for our basic civil liberties. This is our right to privacy. Ladies and gentlemen, we have got to reestablish this and restore a more Republican, small r, form of government in the United States. Now, I want to switch topics to a story out of Texas that's absolutely blowing up right now on the LibertarianRepublic.com. There are 6,000 people reading this one story right now out of Hood County, Texas. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, then we're going to talk about it. Baby Riley is safe after he was found starved nearly to death by his parents. The young couple, Justin and Brittany Alston, were sentenced to 60 years in prison after it was discovered they had starved their baby because they were too lazy to take care of him. Now, last December, several teenagers were attending a party at the couple's mobile home in rural Hood County when they heard crying from the back of the trailer. What they found was horrifying, ladies and gentlemen. Baby Riley was lying there emaciated, covered in urine and vomit, and the teenagers saw this, and they called an adult who brought him to the hospital, where doctors who treated him didn't even believe he would live. The investigators believe that the parents may not have fed him properly for over 2 months. This is just disgusting. Listen to this. Brittany, the mother, told the investigators when she was asked why she didn't feel that why she didn't feed the baby. She said that she had other things to do, like getting oil changed in the car, she said. So the 21-year-old parents admitted that they preferred drinking and smoking pot with their friends instead of taking care of their baby. Hood County District Attorney Robert Christian said, "These parents, I don't know if they wanted him to die, but they were waiting for him to die, and I believe if he had, they'd have thrown him in the trash." Hood County District Attorney right there said that. So the doctors, they fed Riley through an IV until his body could finally accept food. Then they placed him in a foster care home, and in just a few months, he fattened up just like a baby should. So this leads us back to the debate about the non-aggression principle. Now, if you're already a libertarian, then you should be familiar with the basic premise. So the axiom goes that as long as you do no harm to anyone else, no one should do anything to harm you. Now, I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this, but I do want to have a quick discussion with you about the difference between positive rights and negative rights. Now, if someone says that you have a right to health care, like if you say you have a right to Obamacare, they're basically saying that they have a positive right, which implies a positive obligation, meaning that you have to provide health care. If something is a right, that means that it must be provided. Now, a positive right would be a positive obligation, something like health care. But a negative right is something like free speech, meaning that if it's a negative right, that you aren't required to provide anything in order for me to exercise my a right to free speech, for example. A free speech right is a negative right. That it doesn't cost you anything for me to express my right to free speech. But that begs the question, is there a positive obligation on parents to feed, clothe, or maintain or educate your children? Now, the most hardcore, radical, anarcho-capitalists would say no, there's no obligation for parents to do it, because in order for someone to require you to feed your children, that would be a positive obligation and it would require force. But think about this. Now, this is what Rothbard said. He says that even from birth, the parental ownership is not absolute. So a parent doesn't necessarily own their child. It's more of a trustee or a guardianship kind of relationship. Every baby, as soon as it's born, is no longer contained within the mother's body, and it possesses the right of self-ownership by virtue of being a separate entity and a potential child. And Rothbard says it must be therefore illegal and a violation of the child's rights for a parent to aggress against the person by mutilating, torturing, or murdering them. So Rothbard goes ahead and concludes that if you're applying this theory to parents and children, he's saying that parents don't have a right to aggress against the children. And he says that also the parents should not have a legal obligation to feed, clothe, or educate their children, since such obligations would entail positive acts coerced upon the parent and depriving the parent of his rights. The parent, therefore, may not murder or mutilate the child, and the law properly outlaws the parent from doing so, but the parent should have the legal right not to feed the child, i.e. to allow it to die. The law cannot properly compel the parent to feed a child or to keep it alive. And let me just tell you why that's wrong. This is wrong because I disagree with him in the idea that there is no contract between the parent or the child for any sort of an obligation. And there's two things that I want to say about this. One, that I do believe that having a child does imply an obligation, because if you bring a baby into the world, then you should be required to take care of it until the child can no longer take care of itself. We don't allow people to go out and dumpster their babies for a good reason. And the reason why we have a law against people dropping their babies in dumpsters is not even necessarily because we think it's going to stop people from putting babies in dumpsters. The reason is because we have a developed sense of the concept of justice. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, justice. The non-aggression principle is not sufficient to have a full theory of ethical rights. And while I'm not saying the extent of what positive obligations for parents are, whether that should be education, clothing, or feeding them, I think that keeping a baby alive should be a requirement. And there should be a law that you cannot drop a baby in a dumpster and leave it. And the reason is because if there is a law, that means that if someone breaks that law, then there can be consequences to it. And I think that if you look at it, an extreme example, you say, hey, these parents who are starving their children, they needed to go to prison because they shouldn't be allowed to procreate anymore so that they could do this to any more living human beings. And this isn't about punishing the parents, it's about putting them in a situation where they can't be allowed to procreate anymore. This isn't castrating them or neutering them, as some people have suggested. This is simply taking them away from the ability of having any more children and being able to starve those babies to death. So this libertarian believes that there should be a law against putting babies in dumpsters or starving them to death. I'm not sure exactly what sort of obligations parents should have, but I, for one, believe that justice demands that there be a law against this kind of horrific behavior against fellow human beings. And that's it, ladies and gentlemen. The Freedom Report, Episode 5. This is Tuesday, November the 19th. Thanks so very much for listening. Please visit our sponsors, PuffWealth.com. Adam Puff will help you manage your money. Don't forget to visit TheLibertarianRepublic.com every day with tons of news stories and things coming out. The podcast is in its second week, and I really appreciate you guys for listening. We're going a little long today, so I'm going to go ahead and cut it short. Have a great day, and I hope to see you guys all tomorrow back here again.